All right, can everybody hear me? Well, I'm pretty loud in the first place. All right, so I'd also like to say thank you for the introduction and for being here. This has been a great workshop so far, and it's good to see a lot of old friends. So I'm going to talk about our work in MRE in as it relates, brain MRE as it relates to cognitive function, and some of our newest results as we've extended from looking at memory into looking at fluid intelligence. But in the process, we're going to pretty much go through the whole thing. So first, a little bit of motivation. So this is not probably surprising to many of you in here. The brain mechanical properties that we're measuring with MRE are highly sensitive to brain health, right? So we've seen the softening in Alzheimer's, MS, ALS, Parkinson's, several other examples. Well, we have one of my favorite plots here from Ingolf's paper in Soft Matter, but also a couple examples from his group with MS and also the Mayo group looking at the Alzheimer's spectrum. And kind of one of the more robust findings actually is this softening with age that Aaron spoke to. Arvin had really a great paper on it to follow up on Ingolf's seminal work. So my group, and we were working at Illinois, we had a lot of interest in brain aging and brain health and how that relates to cognitive function and how we can relate brain structure to function and also how we can modify that in rehabilitation. So we kind of got the idea to ask the question, if these MRE properties are sensitive to brain health, are they related to cognitive function? And we started specifically with the question of, if we can do MRE of the hippocampus, can we relate that back to memory performance? So we brought some folks in, and this is the experiment that we performed. This is a spatial reconstruction task. This is a task of relational memory, and relational memory is a specific type of memory where you're trying to bind information into a memory through its just this relational, how objects are related to one another. Okay? So it's a task that is actually really sensitive to hippocampal integrity. So if you don't have a hippocampus, you just can't do this. You just slide these squiggles all around at random. So we brought in people, they did this kind of memory game outside the scanner, and then they went in to the scanner and they had an MRE, an MRE scan, and specifically we put them through this high-resolution MRE pipeline to look at the hippocampus, and that's kind of outlined here on the right, and we'll talk about that in more detail later. But I went back to my slides and added all these specific things on there after Armando's talk. So we are looking at what we call the shear stiffness. Don't yell at me for stiffness, okay? But this is what we call it. Other people might call it the wave speed squared. Importantly, we're also looking at the damping ratio. So this is our dimensionless damping parameter there. And that one's gonna come back, we're gonna look at that some more. So what we found, actually, is that we had this really strong relationship between this SR task performance and the hippocampal damping ratio, okay? Such that if the hippocampus behaves more like an elastic solid, okay, if it's behaving more elastically and less viscously, then memory performance is better. What's interesting is that we also didn't, while that relationship was significant, we did not have a significant relationship in either volume or stiffness. And volume is particularly interesting because hippocampal volume is the classic measure of hippocampal integrity, and we know that this task correlates with hippocampal volume in older adults. So we want to point out here, though, that these are 20 healthy young adults, 18 to 35 years old, and to be honest, highly educated males that might be postdocs in cognitive neuroscience. Okay, so this is a very DIY experiment, people that we could bribe to get in the scanner. So these people do not have a volume difference, nor do they really have a memory impairment, but we're able to pair this sensitive task with our sensitive MRE measurement and actually get at some of these structure-function relationships. And so we kind of came to the conclusion that hippocampal viscoelasticity is potentially a more sensitive measure of hippocampal integrity. And while that was cool, we also replicated this finding in a larger sample, also of healthy young adults. This case not as homogeneous. We had women included in this sample, and also they were not as highly educated. So we're feeling pretty good about that, and we start to ask the question, well, what else? You know, hippocampus is great, but there's a lot of other cognitive functions going on in the brain. And we had some folks that are interested in fluid intelligence. And fluid intelligence is the ability that supports flexible, abstract, and adaptive thinking. And there's kind of this canonical task to test for fluid intelligence, and that is this figure series task, where you'll see these different shapes and you have to choose the next one that goes in the series. There are different versions of this task, and this is the one that we use in this study. And through lesion studies and fMRI studies, have really pointed to the prefrontal cortex as kind of a central role in fluid intelligence processing. And really specifically, the volume of the orbital frontal cortex has been related to performance on this type of task. Again, I'll make the caveat, that is in older adults where we're going to see this volume change. So we asked the question, you know, can we perform MRE of the orbital frontal cortex and relate this back to our relationship of fluid intelligence through this figure series task? So the way that we did MRE of the orbital frontal cortex is that we simply just used our hippocampal MRE pipeline and just applied it to the cortex, okay? So that pipeline is that we take an MP RAGE and we do a free surface segmentation of it, so we get a subject-specific mask. We couple that with our high-resolution MRE data, so these are the 1.6 millimeter isotropic voxels that we're getting with our multi-slab sequence. Again, for completeness, Armando, we are at 50 hertz here, okay? What we do with that mask is that we use that in our nonlinear inversion, and we use that as a spatial prior, and through something called soft prior regularization. This is something that Matt McGarry invented here. And what that does, what we think that that does, is that's going to protect these small regions from neighboring CSF issues, but also neighboring tissues swallowing up the smaller cortex as a thin structure. We think that we saw this had a big strong effect in the hippocampus, and we published a paper on that. So we didn't optimize this for the cortex, we just tossed our hippocampal process at it. So these are just some summary results. We scanned 53 healthy young adults here. These are 18 to 35 years old. Again, men and women, these are not as highly educated. We just have the stiffness values at the top. You'll notice that the cortex here is softer than our cerebrum, is softer than the hippocampus, and so that makes sense. We've kind of seen that as a community, that the gray matter is softer. In damping ratio, it's a lot higher than the hippocampus, but it's about similar to the cerebrum as a whole. We also used our repeated measurements that we had published before, looking at the hippocampus in our HBM paper. And the damping ratio in particular, 6.7% coefficient of variation, that's pretty good. That's probably better than we expected to get. For the stiffness, we have 2.4%, and that's maybe a little out of whack, but we're going to come back to that later at the end. But we feel good enough about 6.7% in damping ratio, which is where we expect to find an effect, that we can continue on. And this is also where I'll note, again, I added this slide after Armando's talk. We are here going to talk about the adjusted damping ratio. And this is a term that we made up specifically for publishing these papers, which is just 1 minus the damping ratio. In this case, higher values mean more elastic behavior, and lower values mean more viscous behavior. So it's really just the opposite interpretation of the damping ratio. If you want to talk to me about why we did that, don't talk to me, okay? Just email somebody else about it. I'll take your criticisms at any time. I'll also note, just for completeness, we're also showing measurement residuals here. Okay, so this is not—we're not going to be plotting the actual adjusted damping ratio. We'll plot the residuals after we control for age and sex factor. So it's really just the variability that we're plotting here at the end. So here are the results. So we start with the relationship that we showed before. So this is now we've collapsed that spatial reconstruction task down to one number. This is just an accuracy. And we see that the hippocampal damping ratio correlates with that spatial reconstruction task, as we had reported previously. And it does not correlate with the figure series task of fluid intelligence. Okay, so that makes sense. We don't expect hippocampus to go with fluid intelligence. When we look at the orbital frontal cortex, on the other hand, that does correlate with the fluid intelligence figure series score, as we expect, and it does not correlate with the memory task, relational memory performance. Again, as we expect, we don't think that these two structures are interacting for these specific functions. And these correlations are such that the differences in correlation strength are actually themselves significant. And that's what we've kind of indicated here with these different p-values. So together, what this actually forms is this forms what we call a double dissociation. And a double dissociation is really the gold standard for identifying selective and dissociable structure-function relationships in the brain. It, from a cognitive neuroscience psychology perspective, it's the only way that we can actually say, we know that this structure does this and this structure does this, okay? Is you get this double dissociation type of relationship. And what MRE can provide here is that we can see that MRE is going to return these sensitive, functionally relevant measures even in healthy young adults, right? So we have to keep this in mind, is that we're seeing things that we haven't seen these type of relationships before without some level of additional impairment, and MRE is starting to reveal that to us here. And I'll also note, maybe more from an MRE technical side, that it speaks to both the sensitivity and specificity of these regional brain MRE measurements, right? We've been talking about getting regional measurements, it obviously makes a lot of sense, and we're providing a lot of data here to say that, yes, getting a regional measurement is going to give you some specific information that you're not going to get from, say, a whole brain measurement. And that really supports that we should keep using MRE for both for brain mapping and for looking at health and disease. So I have a little note here about challenges in cortical MRE remain. I do not want anyone here to think that we've solved cortex MRE. So the cortex is a really challenging structure. It's really thin. It's like a 1.5 to 4.5 millimeters, okay? It's surrounded by CSF. It also has the sulcal discontinuity. So even the model for MRE is sort of already violated because we have these boundaries here, in addition to various imaging issues, especially related to field inhomogeneity. And so we've done our best here. We gave it our best shot, but we have not optimized anything for the cortex. And so what I would want the take-home message to be is that we can do a lot better, and we can probably build on this result. We can build on that result in looking at other regions of the cortex and looking at other cognitive functions, especially ones that are fairly well-defined and we know where to look. So I'm almost out of time, but I'm going to show two things, because why are we doing this, right? We want to take this and say these are sensitive measures of brain health, okay? And we've kind of been exploring what we can do with this in the hippocampus specifically. And so this is data where we looked at aerobic fitness, and we know that aerobic fitness actually leads to better hippocampal health, again, in older adults and in children in this case. And we were finding that our MRE measurement is starting to reveal how aerobic fitness is changing our hippocampal integrity in our young adults, and actually that mediates this relationship between fitness and relational memory, such that if the higher fitness leads to better hippocampal damping ratio, which then leads to better memory performance. And we've also done that a little bit in actually exercise intervention, where this is folks with MS going through a 3-month exercise intervention. It's a small N, but that the before and after intervention had a big change in memory performance, but it also had that change in memory performance correlated with the change in hippocampal damping ratio, as well as stiffness in this case, which is a kind of an interesting thing. And these numbers are massive. I'm not going to take 0.96 to the bank, but it's really kind of cool preliminary data. We've seen that similar thing in our young adults as well in a small sample. And lastly, we were really interested in aging, but I'm going to let Lucy talk about that in a couple talks, and so I don't want to step all over her slides there. So that's just a little teaser. And lastly, this is my group at Delaware. These are people that work with me, and I'll point out Matt and Hillary, who have been kind of the driving with me on this cognitive function stuff for the couple years. So anytime I get to use this picture of Matt, I take that opportunity, and so we'll toss it up there. And that's all. I'll take any questions.
I was just wondering, when you're making your ROIs for your hippocampal volumes, is that manually done, or are you?
Nope, it's FreeSurfer automatic.
FreeSurfer?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
This was second was actually way over here. Now. Gotta be fair.
Thank you. Jens from Basel. Do you have an explanation for the training effect you see, like biological?
We don't know yet. So we have a hunch that it is neurogenesis related. So hippocampal, you know, the hippocampus experiences neurogenesis throughout the lifespan. It also exercise induces its neurogenesis, specifically in the hippocampus. We even have some data to suggest that that hippocampal effect is isolated to the dentate gyrus specifically, where that's where neurogenesis happens. As we move out towards the cortex, though, that's less clear. We know that there are training effects in orbital frontal cortex, but it's not what the biological thing is a little bit more murky there. They don't know, you know, we can point in animals, we say, hippocampus neurogenesis exercise, that makes sense. But why we're getting volume changes in the oral frontal cortex and that our results sort of agree with that, that I'm not as sure about. I have a hunch it's an angiogenic thing. That's just my hunch. We haven't explored that quite yet.
Thank you.
There's Neil up there.
Thank you very much. I wonder if I may have missed it, but did you show whether there's a relationship between cognitive performance and volume of the hippocampus?
Not in our sample, so there's no volume effect. Our MRE data does not correlate with volume. Volume does not correlate with cognitive function in our sample. Same holds true for orbital frontal cortex. That's not going to be true in more impaired populations, obviously, where we actually have a change in volume. It's going to be a tricky thing to sort of suss out because we expect MRE should also be changing if there's a volume change. We're sort of pointing to some evidence that we're going to get MRE changes maybe before we see a volume change, but we have some experiments to do, especially as we move into an aging population. MS will likely have a similar effect, as we know we have hippocampal degeneration in MS, but we're working on that.
And is it a way to sharpen these sorts of studies by looking at lateralization of whether the functional imaging, they've shown different functions for the left and right hippocampus. Have you got any supporting evidence in terms of lateralization?
So we have looked at left-right. We have not seen a difference in MRE measures, and we haven't seen a difference in our cognitive relationships. And as far as I understand this specific task, we do not have left-right hypotheses to test regarding this relational memory task. And I sort of let Hillary drive me on whether we should be doing left-right things. I think that as we go forward, if we develop strong hypotheses regarding a specific task, then we would definitely be looking at that.
Yeah, I think face recognition memory in the right hippocampus has been shown to have a significant relationship.
Yeah, so that's the kind of studies that we need to run.
Curtis, have you looked at other deep gray matter regions, for example, the putamen?
Yes.
Is there also some memory effect, or I mean, as far as I know, there shouldn't be a memory effect in the putamen?
Yeah. So we
reference region?
In the original paper we used some control region. We did look at all in our human brain mapping paper. We had just the six structures that come out of FreeSurfer, and there were no memory relationships with any of those. We went through several revisions of that paper, exactly went into the final version. I'm not actually clear right now. But we did not see with other deep gray matter regions these relationships, yeah. We've looked at several other control regions, especially for the orbital frontal cortex part, that's here, for the paracalcarine cortex. And this is a visual area that was just flat. So this was our sort of control region for this study. But we've looked at that. We've included control regions as we've gone along and not seen that effect either.